guys, welcome back to the 503 for the Fans podcast. This is Noah here. It's episode 3 of the offseason edition, probably one of the last offseason episodes, so it's going to be a fun one. I got a lot of headlines to go through since I haven't posted since like last Saturday, so about a week and a half now. But before we get started, I recently sponsored with a site called NBA Top Shot. It's a site where you can buy, sell, and trade the best NBA moments and collectibles of the best NBA highlights. If you're really into buying and selling and trading things, it's a great site for you. And if you want more information, check out their Twitter at NBA underscore Top Shot and check out their website at NBATopShot.com. All right, so before we dive into this, we got a lot to go through this episode. I posted last Saturday, which was like the second day of free agency. That next morning on the Sunday, the Blazers announced that they signed Harry Giles to the minimum. So I know a lot of people already know that already, but that is, for me, that's a very underrated signing. We'll touch into that later. Another thing the Blazers did is they signed CJ Elby to a regular roster spot. They did this to avoid the tax, so they would have signed him to a two-way and signed another vet to fill that 14th roster spot. They would have been over the tax. So it was kind of a tricky situation, but the Blazers have 14 dudes right now. CJ Elby solidifies that, so I'm excited. Enes Kanter, in his interview, said some he praised Nurk really, really hard, and I respect it. He said if Nurk doesn't go down, he believes the Blazers could have had a chance to win the championship. We'll talk about that later. We'll talk about Neil Shea's, Dame's, and Terry Stotts interviews right after this. So some good headlines to go through. Probably the saddest headline of the day is Wenyen Gabriel got announced a couple days ago that he recently signed with the New Orleans Pelicans. So we'll miss Wenyen Gabriel, his energy, his tenaciousness on the boards, and energy. So there's a lot to miss with Wenyen. I'm sad he couldn't come back, but I think he's have a really successful career in the NBA and have a breakout season maybe. So let's just dive right into Neil Shea's, Dame's, and Terry Stotts interviews. There's a lot to go through. Neil Shea's was first, and it was a couple days after free agency. The biggest thing he talked about, which was a biggest question for the Blazers during this offseason, was what is Melo's role going to be on this team? Does he come back and play a bench role, or does he come back and be a starter, which is not really highly likely on a healthy team, or does he leave and try to be a starter on another team? Like I went over, the Blazers signed him back, and Neil Shea said that he expects Melo to come off the bench, and Terry Stotts backed that up as well. And something that was interesting to me, and I also kind of predicted, was they said that they expect the starting lineup to be Dame, CJ, Derrick Jones Jr., Rocco, and Nurk. Some people might not agree with it. I get the initial concern of Derrick Jones Jr. shooting. He's around four dudes who can shoot. I mean, people could say, oh, Nurk's not a solidified three-point shooter yet. I do think that Nurk adds a more consistent aspect to that, to his game this year. I mean, he was already showing flares and flashes of it in the bubble. And he's working with Phil Beckner, who's Dame's shooting coach, so that's something to look for. But still, this starting lineup has plenty of shooting for Derrick Jones Jr. to work and cut through. I mean, Dame and CJ, you know how much attention they create and how much attention the defense draws towards them. I mean, the biggest thing with this starting lineup with Derrick Jones Jr. is that, I mean, he really just has to hit the open shot. And he's a 27% shooter from three last year. One thing I've been telling people, though, is that Portland has had a history of guys coming from previous teams and coming to Portland and their shooting percentages are just skyrocketing. I mean, I have some percentages here. Mo Harkless shot 17% from three in Orlando. The next season he comes over to Portland, he shoots 28%. And then the next season he shoots 34%. So Mo Harkless made significant strides while being in Portland with his shooting. And there's a reason towards that. It's because of Dame and CJ. It's how much attention the defense draws towards them is that Mo and Aminu had a lot of open shots to take and a lot of open threes. So I would expect the same for Derrick Jones Jr. I don't think takes such a significant jump where he's shooting 36 or between 36 and 40%. No, that's just not realistic. But if he can be in the starting lineup and shoot 33 to 35%, and that's still a tall task. If he could do that, I mean, that starting lineup is one of the best starting lineups in the league, if not already one of them. Rocco is, his percentages are going to fly up playing on Portland. He was in Houston. He shot 33% in the regular season, 50% in the playoffs, which is enormous for the Blazers to have. But 33% in the regular season for Houston, he was shooting a career high attempts. It was all he was shooting. It's a predictable shot when it's every single time. But still, I really like Rocco's potential. His corner three is 50%. We know what we're going to get out of Rocco. I'm confident in his shooting, but I really like the starting lineup. I think Terry and I obviously people could say Hood should be the starting three. And I think Hood, if DJJ is going to struggle, I think Hood will eventually get into that. But Terry Stotts in his interview kind of hinted at Hood being on a minutes restriction to start the year, which I don't blame them. I mean, there's no real rush to get Hood healthy right away. They have health. I mean, Gary Trent and Derrick Jones Jr., Rocco can even play the three. Melo can play the three. I know that's not a lot of people would like, but I mean, we have the depth to in Nazir Little too. So we have the depth to kind of hold off if guys are hurt. And I mean, Hoodie, I love for him to be 100% and be starting, but obviously his year of after injury is just this month. I think it was like, it was in November the 20th. So sorry, it's December 1st now. My bad. But I think with Hoodie, I think he could be on a 20 minutes restriction for the first month or so. We'll get a good dose of what he's going to be like. If DJJ really struggles that much, then maybe he starts or Gary starts. I don't know. But the biggest thing in that interview with Neil Shea and Terry Stotts was about Melo, in my opinion. They said it's not about who starts the game. It's about who finishes the game. So watch out for Melo being that clutch lineup type of player, which is he's perfectly suited for. I mean, you saw in the bubble, he hit clutch shots. He played really good defense for being a three and playing wings and being as seriously him and Gary Trent were our two best wing defenders. And Melo, I love you, man, but you're not a good defender. So, and he tried his ass off. So I can't blame Melo. So, I think I really like this move to put Melo on the bench. Some people couldn't agree, but he's going to be the main vocal point of that offense. He's going to get more touches. He's going to have that respect factor on the second unit. I mean, people in the second unit are usually on other teams are usually second year guys or rookies or you name it. But I mean, Melo's going to demand some respect from people. And that's what Dame touched about in his interview as well. It's just the respect factor of it. I mean, he said that teams size you up and they look at your squad and they're like, okay, who do we have to respect on the squad? And Melo is someone that you have to respect. And yes, you could look at his analytics and say, oh, Melo shot bad here. And it's easy to nitpick Melo's game. And I don't disagree. He struggled at times, but I really think this move to the bench for Melo is A+ for this team. I mean, that we haven't had a score like this off the bench. And I couldn't even remember. Maybe since Jamal Crawford, but we know how that experiment went. But yeah, I'm really excited about Melo coming off the bench. Another thing that they touched about was Neil Shea was asked, why didn't you sign a backup point guard? The media was talking about it. They felt like you guys needed a vet point guard. And Neil Shea quickly responded and said, we have a backup point guard. It's Anfernee Simons. My thoughts on this are iffy because I think it's right. I don't see a vet, even if they signed a vet, number one, that takes away minutes from Gary. And number two, that takes away minutes from backup point guard CJ. So if they sign a backup point guard vet, is CJ going to play 30 minutes or less a night? No, he's not going to go from playing the most minutes of the league to 30 minutes. That's just not realistic. CJ is going to play 34 minutes a night, probably. And that's at to the least in my opinion. But still, yeah, if you sign a vet backup PG, then that stunts Anthony's development even more. Like I said, hurts Gary's minutes. So it's a smart move to ride with him one more year. And if he really struggles this much and we're missing a third playmaker that much, Yes, I could see them pursuing something because they do have the extra roster spot, but it would put us into the tax. So I don't know what they do there. Maybe they try to trade Ant, and that's just not likely. So it's a tough situation for Ant too, because he's the backup point guard, yes, but that doesn't mean he's going to get rotation minutes, because this team is so deep. It's hard to slot Ant into a place where it's like, okay, I could see him getting 10 minutes here or 15. He's not going to get that every night. He's going to get spurts where either we're sitting out someone like Melo sitting out, or, you know, Hoodie sitting out, or just you name it. He's going to get spurts where he's going to get chances. I don't doubt that, but he's not going to get a nightly basis of minutes. And he just didn't earn that last season, and Gary did. And Gary's in a different position than him. Ant has a lot more to learn in this offense to be a backup point guard, to facilitate. Gary just has to worry about shooting and defending. And it's a little more simple for Gary. But, yeah, and I respect their comments. I think it's smart to not stunt Ant's development at all, but I do get why people would question why we wouldn't get a third playmaker when we had one previously for the past 4 years in Evan Turner, and try to get one in Mario Hezonja. So we know how those worked out. But yeah, it's tough to really see a vet point guard getting minutes on this team. And it's even tough to see Ant getting minutes on this team as well, because how deep we are. But we're going to go to a quick break. I'll go over some off-season grades, maybe touch back into the interview a little bit. But we'll go to a quick break and we'll be right back. Alrighty, and we are back. So we are going to break down some off-season grades. I've been kind of dying to go over this for the past week. I had some finals in college, so couldn't post one this week. But some off-season grades. Free agency is about over. It's, I would say, 95%. There's some guys going on two-way contracts, some vet mins to fill out the rosters, but it's about over. So number one, I'm gonna go best, and I'm gonna go worst. So I'm gonna go five best and five worst. The five best, it hurts me to say it, but it's the Lakers. Number one, they got Dennis Schroeder, they got Montrezl Harrell, they got Marc Gasol, Wes Matthews. They did lose Rajon Rondo, Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee. So they did lose some guys from that finals team that made some key contributions. I would put them number one because they got a lot for their price tag, and this is why I do put the Blazers, and I would just say it now, I'll put the Blazers number two, because they are two teams that got a lot done with a small price tag to do it with. So, I mean, they maximized all their money and got the best, probably the best talent they could get for what they could throw at people. I mean, the Lakers are probably the only team in this league that gets Montrezl Harrell for the full MLE, which is just ridiculous, but it's Lakers and it's their market. And the Clippers, obviously, if he's going there, I don't think the Clippers offered Montrezl Harrell. So I'll put the Lakers number one. Number two, Blazers, like I said. Blazers and downright had one of the best offseasons in the league. And if anyone says they didn't, and they're just downright wrong. And I'm not even saying that with a biased view, but when you replace Mario Hezonja, Trevor Ariza, Hassan Whiteside, and I'll even throw Anthony Tolliver in there too, because that's four dudes. I mean, we'll miss Trevor and Wace, but that's and Hassan Wace, but that's four dudes who were on the team last year. Was a disaster, and Ariza came in and gave them life. But they replaced those four with Robert Covington, Derrick Jones Jr., Anis Kanter, Hood, Giles, and Melo. So they brought back about five people. For those four, that is a huge turnaround, and they got some continuity back. Kanter back from the Western Conference Finals. They got Hood back finally. So Blazers have that continuity that they had for previous four seasons that they kind of relied upon. And something that Terry Stotts said himself in the interview that he kind of felt they took advantage of, and kind of missed the season. So they have that. And I mean, they replaced, I mean, I love Aminu Amo, but Derrick Jones Jr. and Robert Covington are two huge upgrades, both offensively and defensively. So, I mean, there's no point if there's someone that says, oh, I've seen people say, oh, like, what have the Blazers done this offseason? I mean, how can you even ask that question? I mean, I have a hard time just thinking, like, do you watch basketball or do you follow NBA news if you really have to question that? But enough about the Blazers. Number three, I'll have to get to Atlanta. I mean, I wouldn't put them number one or two just because, like I said, they had a lot of money to spend. They made great moves, but kind of puzzling moves in some aspect. I mean, paying Gallo $20 million to come off the bench is just, I think that's a little hefty for Gallo. But I mean, they are kind of a smaller market at this time with where they are in their franchise. So, I think that it is an overpay. I was anticipating for Gallo to be on the MLE because he said he wanted to sign for a contender and he would take a pay cut. So that was a bit surprising. It kind of looked like Gallo chased the bag a little bit, which I don't blame him. I don't think he's ever going to get $20 million again in his career. So, I mean, it's a hard deal to turn down, but, yeah, I'll give them number three. They got Bogdan Bogdanovic as well. So they're going to have one of the deepest teams in the league too. I mean, that's a good thing for Atlanta to have. Trae Young said he wanted to be in the playoffs. He wanted to be competitive. So they gave him that. So watch out for Atlanta. I think they're 7th, 8th seed in the East. I don't know if they get higher than that, then kudos to them. They proved me wrong. Number 4 and 5 is kind of a tie for me. It's between Philly and the Suns. I have a hard time fully giving this to the Suns because I'll put the Suns at 5 and Philly at 4. Philly did a lot too. I mean, they got off Al Horford's contract. They got Seth Curry, Danny Green. They traded Jason Richardson. So, I mean, they made some good moves. I mean, you got to hand it to Philly. I mean, Daryl Morey, God, I can't even say his last name. He made some great moves coming in there. Getting Seth Curry, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the league, you would know if you're a Blazers fan. So that's a really good move for them. They got some shooters around their main core guys, which is a plus for them, which they didn't have last season. So the Suns, I'll give them 5. And obviously, adding Chris Paul adds a lot to the Suns. I mean, it hires their playoff ceiling. I mean, it gives them a real good chance to make the playoffs, but they're still not guaranteed to make the playoffs. I mean, yes, it's the Suns. This is a team that also hasn't been to the playoffs in over a decade. Devin Booker's never been. They got close in the bubble, so I understand why people are riding with the Suns. I understand why people are like kind of jumping the gate on them, but don't jump the gate too much. And I'm not even trying to hate, and it's just, but this isn't prime CP3. He did a great job with OKC, but you could honestly say OKC was a better team than this Phoenix team. I mean, they had almost four dudes averaging 20 points per game on OKC. I don't see that happening for the Suns, but him and Booker are going to be a great backcourt. Probably top 5 backcourt in the league. It was a good offseason for the Suns. They got depth. They got Jay Crowder. They got Langston Galloway, Etuan Moore. So they made some good moves. But yeah, I'll put them 5. And worst, number one, this is probably the easiest one. Number one has to be the Detroit Pistons. I mean, what was their direction? I don't know what their entire motive or what their mindset was going. They had a good draft. They got Killian Hayes. They got Isaiah Stewart. So they had a good draft, and they got Sadiq Bey. So they had a good draft. But the offseason was just weird. I mean, they got Mason Plumlee. I think they gave him Mason Plumlee about $7 to $8 million or $9 million per. Just outrageous outrageous. They pried Jeremy Grant away from Denver, which Denver comes up on number 2 on my list for worst. They gave him $20 million per. It's just a weird move. Like, what's the direction of the franchise? I mean, you now have like 5 power forwards. You pretty much choose Jeremy Grant and Mason Plumlee over Christian Wood, who had a breakout year with you guys the previous year. So yeah, Detroit, it's just a head case over there. I don't know what's going down. They traded Luke Kennard, Bruce Brown. I mean, yeah, I don't know what's going on in Detroit. But number 2, Denver, and I'll put them here solidly, because I think Denver's in a tricky spot. I think they're in a very realistic spot to be like the Blazers last year. And I say this because they went to the Western Conference Finals. They lost the key. They lost some key guys in the offseason. They're going to have to rely on really heavily on Michael Porter Jr. this year. I think they're going to rely on Bobo being their backup five. So they have stuff to rely on. They have question marks, a lot like the Blazers. They don't have the depth that they've always had. I mean, losing Jeremy Grant, who came off the bench majority of the year, is a huge blow to their defense. I mean, they don't really have any versatile defenders anymore. I mean, Paul Millsap can kind of guard, but he's 35 years old. And depending on it's kind of tough for them because if they have to go from depending on Jeremy Grant more and have Millsap fill as a kind of vet and give them leadership, but now they have to lean on a 35-year-old Millsap versus him at 34, where they could kind of place him on the bench and like they did in the playoffs. So I mean, it's a tough situation for Denver. I mean, they signed Green, who's a good backup power forward for them, but they are seriously one injury away from being like the Blazers. And I don't wish upon any injuries, but they just don't have that depth anymore. They don't have the defenders like they do. Will Barton, Gary Harris are two guys that have been hurt a lot in the playoffs and just in the regular season, so they're not the most durable. So, and those are their two best defenders now. So it was a tough offseason for Denver. I think they still made some good moves. I mean, they got RJ Hampton, so they made some good moves. I mean, Green was a good pickup. I would have liked him in Portland. But number three, I'll go Boston. And I'll go Boston because number one, they were stingy with the Gordon Hayward move. There was a rumor, and I think it was solidified, that they turned down a sign-and-trade for Miles Turner and Doug McDermott for Gordon Hayward, which is something I just think is ludicrous to turn down. Especially for, I mean, they ended up getting the largest TPE in NBA history out of that Charlotte deal. But they are going to be hard capped with the Tristan Thompson signing. So I don't know how they're going to use that. But yeah, Boston, it was an iffy offseason for them. I mean, they kind of lose Gordon Hayward for nothing. Kemba Walker just got announced he's going to be hurt for kind of like Zach for a month or so. So they got some questions to fill. They're going to have to rely more on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But number four, I have to go to the San Antonio Spurs. And I'll say this because the Spurs are the Spurs. I mean, they just had another boring offseason. I mean, and I'm not trying to say that they're just this boring franchise, but they absolutely should have tried to trade LaMarcus Aldridge and DeRozan. This team doesn't really have a direction as well. They got some good young talent, but are you guys going to try to rebuild after missing the playoffs for the first time in 20 years? Are you going to run it back 1 year with LaMarcus and DeRozan and try to see if you can slide into an 8 seed? I mean, this Spurs team is good, but I mean, I wouldn't say they're a top 5 team by all means. But yeah, I think they should have been a lot more aggressive in the offseason. I think they should have tried to trade DeRozan, obviously not to someone like the Lakers who were rumored, but I think DeRozan should have gone, and LaMarcus too, who's going to be a free agent. So that experiment kind of failed, and so it's tough for the Spurs. And number five, it was hard because after those first three I listed, it was kind of a drop off. I'll go with the Mavs here at number five because I'll say this: Seth Curry is a big blow. Yes, they got somewhat better on defense. I think it's tough for me because, I mean, Seth Curry was kind of that guy. Yes, they signed back Trey Burke, who kind of broke out for them, so they probably felt that they could lose Seth Curry. Richardson's a good pickup. He's a good defender at the two position, so him and Luka will be able to play next to each other. So I like some of their moves, but I think they also feel like James Johnson was a good pickup. He's making $18 million, he's expiring, I understand, but it's just, they made some iffy moves. I felt like they could have got a better defender, but yeah, I'll put them five. It's kind of hard to get after that, but we'll end the show after this. I'll go through some Western Conference playoffs predictions, because, wow, I mean, ESPN came out with the most horrendous, I mean, horrendous playoff predictions. They had Portland as ninth. They had, I think it was Lakers, Clippers, Houston, Nuggets, Mavs, Jazz, and the Pelicans and the Suns. Wow. Yeah, that's awful. They had the Pelicans ahead of the Blazers for the playoffs. And that's I don't even want to touch on the Suns. I don't even want to touch. I mean, the Blazers, I don't see how you put them outside of the top. I understand if you have this thing against the Blazers, you're like, oh, they could be the 8 seed again with how deep the West is. I mean, if you really think that, then sure. My opinion, and it is somewhat biased, but how do you put this Blazers roster outside of the top 5 in the West? They're deep in every position. I mean, point guard is the only questionable thing, but it's Dame and CJ are going to be playing that every single night. So their front court went from being very depleted last season to one of the deepest in the league. They'll have probably the second or maybe the best bench in the league. One of the best starting units, a top 5 offense, a potential top 15 defense. So, I mean, if you're top 5 offense and you're, say, 11th, 12th defense, which is, I think, is feasible with our roster, you're not going to be top 5. You're not going to be outside of the top 5. And so my list will go like this. I'll go the Lakers, Clippers, Portland as a third seed, Nuggets, Mavs, Houston, Utah, and Suns. And then I'll give the Warriors the 9th seed and 10 the Pelicans, Memphis, Wolves, and Kings. That it's hard for me. You could throw the talent wise. I mean, yes, you see Kawhi on the Clippers, and like, okay, they have to be number 2. They got Ibaka, but I don't necessarily think the Clippers and Lakers finish there. I think they could both slide a little bit. The Clippers, we know, rest people kind of like Kawhi. Does he load manage this year? We'll see what happens with that. Lakers are coming off a finals. They played like literally in late September. Early October. So, I mean, I think they're going to rest some dudes, I think. So, I don't know if they'll get the first seed. So, but based off talent, I would say it's like this. But it's outrageous for ESPN to put the Blazers at ninth. And even their description of when they write in the Blazers at ninth, they say much likely to finish higher than this, but we will slot them here because we don't know to put them ahead of. You don't know who to put them ahead of? You don't know? You think the New Orleans Pelicans, who just traded Drew Holiday? I'm sorry, but that's just mind-boggling to me that they're going to put the Pelicans ahead of the Blazers. And that doesn't even get me started on the Suns or Utah or Houston. I mean, even the Mavs. I mean, the Blazers legitimately, look at their roster. I don't see a reason for them. If they're healthy, I downright think they are going to be a 3 seed. If they get off to a good start, and I think they can get off to a great start. So, with everyone being healthy besides Zach, really. So, yeah, it's outrageous for ESPN to have that. I've seen some other sites rate the Blazers as the 5th seed, which is fine. And I'm not going to freak out over that. I mean, but I do see this Portland team being a top 4 seed in the West. There's no reason for them not to. Even Bobby Marks of ESPN said the Blazers had the best offseason in the league. He had them as his number 2 team in the West. And so he's a pretty highly remarked guy. It's tough for me to see them outside of the top 4. And before we end this, I'll go over Dame's comments about Nurk. He said he felt Nurk could be an all-star this year. Said if we get out to a good start, Nurk puts up great numbers. He could really see it, and I could see it too. A good point though about it is that this, who would you? And people can comment on me on this. Who would you rather the Blazers make as a first-time All-Star, CJ McCollum or Nurkic? I would say, I asked this in my group chat. A majority of them said CJ, and someone made a good point. He said he would rather CJ be a first-time All-Star because CJ's already locked up till 2025. So if he does that, he can't really demand a new contract, because I mean, we're paying him $33 million a year. But if Nurkic, since his contract is coming up soon, if Nurkic has a career year, then he feels like Nurkic might get the max, and I don't know if we're going to be able to afford that. So I think there's a good point there. I would love Nurkic to be an all-star. I think that if he was playing at an all-star level, this team is downright contenders. But yeah, I think it would be tough. I would rather have CJ. I think CJ's earned it just a little bit more. He's put in a lot of work over these years at that guard spot. He would be an all-star in the East probably two times already. But yeah, so that's a tough situation to pick. But yeah, I would obviously love Nurkic to be an all-star. Like Enes Kanter said, he felt like Nurkic was an all-star last year before he went down. And he felt like Nurkic, if he was on the team, they could have won the championship. So Nurkic has that impact. And if he could somewhat even get close to like a straight-up all-star caliber center, I mean, this team is they're trouble. And Dame and CJ already have – I mean, Dame and Nurk have the best net rating in the NBA. It was like 10.8. It was above – like, it was above Giannis and Middleton. It was above guys like that. I mean, so Dame and CJ – when Dame and Nurk are on the court together, the Blazers are a problem. And especially when Nurk's 100%. So we'll wrap up this episode. It was a good talking to you guys. I'll try to release one more episode of the offseason edition. We got 10 days left until the offseason is done, and we have our first preseason game on December 11th against the Kings. Rematch with Hassan Whiteside, who just signed a minimum there. So, wow. Hassan's going to be right back in Portland less than a month without with signing with a new team. So this is going to be eventful. We play the Kings twice in the preseason and Denver twice. Yes, we play Denver again. We play them every year. I'm tired of them. But we'll wrap this up. Thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure to follow my Twitter at 503BlazerFans, and I'll check you guys out later.